Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. World-renowned marathon runner Dick Beardsley returns to South Dakota to inspire and encourage. He's one of the top long-distance runners of all time. He's also an author and a professional speaker. He has survived accidents, addiction, and loss, and he's still famous for coming in second to Alberto Salazar in the Boston Marathon after a course motorcycle briefly interfered with Beardsley's trajectory near the final moments of the race. Dick Beardsley will share his life challenges and inspiring stories in Brookings tonight. That's at 7 p.m. Central Time in the SDSU University Student Union, and he's joining us now from the Janine Basinger Studio at SDSU. Dick Beardsley, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Lori, thank you. It's always great to get back to South Dakota, and especially up here in Brookings. It brings back a lot of good memories from way back when.
Yeah, you're a Minnesota native, right? And so you spent a lot of time here. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But this campus has grown so much since I was here 42 years ago. It's not even funny.
Yeah, and we have a little studio there for you to sit and talk to us this time instead of on the phone as well.
Absolutely.
That's fabulous. So when you come back and you sort of see things, you know, changing in the places that you've been before, your own life has changed too. Is your message changed to people from, you know, even the last time that you were here talking at Black Hill State?
You know, probably the only thing that's changed is just my my faith is even I've faith has always played an important part in my life, but I think even more so as the years go by and some other things have happened in my life and whatnot, and it's just about, you know, trying to keep your head up and keep, you know, taking little baby steps forward if that's what you need to do to keep going forward. And so it's something that, you know, I cherish every day. I wake up, I thank the good Lord for that. And I go to bed at night and I can't wait to see what the next day is going to bring.
One of the things that we have been talking about a lot in South Dakota lately is addiction and meth addiction and opioid addiction. And this is something that you had a very low when it came to addiction, how many pills you were taking per day. Talk a little bit about how you were able to take some of those first baby steps to saving your own life.
Yeah, well, Lori, I tell you, the opioid crisis is, everybody knows about that now. And, you know, I had a number of bad accidents and I don't blame any of this on anybody except myself, but I don't use this as an excuse, but you know, I was in a number of bad accidents, had multiple surgeries to put me back together. And anyhow, long story short, I became addicted to narcotic painkillers, mainly Percocet and Demerol. And it was overwhelming. I mean, I started doctor shopping, and this was before the age of computers, so it's pretty much impossible to do that now. But when I couldn't find any more doctors to give me any more painkillers, and I started forging my own prescriptions, and I was a kid that had never been in any trouble. I'd never stolen a piece of bubble gum. And thankfully, on September 30th of 1996, I was probably within a couple of days of never waking up again. I got caught. And at that point, I was pretty much at, you know, rock bottom. And I was fortunate to get into a treatment program. And coming up on February 12th, God willing, it'll be my 23rd year of sobriety from the narcotic painkillers.
Wow. Congratulations. I'm so glad. I'm so glad that
well,
you're here.
You.
And that you have
so
this.
So am I.
Yeah. Was it hard to share that story?
For me, it wasn't. For a lot of people, it is. But for me, difficulties that I've gone through in my life, when I can share them with others, knowing that maybe something I say might help them through a difficult time, helps me. And I can't imagine keeping some of these things that have happened to me locked up inside. I think I would explode like a too much air-filled balloon. So I really do enjoy sharing these stories. Now, when I say that, I enjoy sharing them, but it takes a lot out of me because I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve, and it's a very emotional type of talk. But yet, when I go in and do a speaking engagement somewhere, I figure if one person, however many people are there, comes out of there with something that I said that can help them, then mission accomplished.
Yeah. One of the things you talk about is being world class, and you were a world class runner But also trying to be world-class in your own life. And I want to get at this idea because last time I went back and listened to our conversation, and last time we didn't talk about this, which was, you know, when you've been to, you know, the Boston Marathon and you've been, you know, to the level of a world-class runner that you are, the acknowledgments you get, the accolades you get, most people don't ever stand in that kind of space in the public imagination. It has its strengths and it had its problems for you. But for people just kind of going through their everyday life, how do you talk to them about being world-class in whatever, in just being a person?
Yes. Yeah, well, you know, and that's the thing. You know, people for years and people still to this day have always tried to put me on a pedestal. Like, wow, he's one of the best ever, blah, blah, blah. And I would never allow that to happen. And I would never, ever put myself up on that pedestal because maybe at one time in my life I could put one foot in front of the other faster than most people could. You and somebody, you know, down the road can do something as way better than I can do. And so we all have our things that we're good at and things that we have a passion for. And I had a passion for running. And even though I'm almost 64 now, I still have a passion for running. I'm slower than molasses in January, but I still enjoy getting out there every day. But for me, and some of the things that, you know, we all go through difficult things in our lives, and what might be difficult for me might seem nothing to you or vice versa. And it's easy to get swallowed up and kind of wallow in your self-pity and things like that, but that's really not doing you any good at all. So I try to, you know, yes, I have to deal with the situation. I don't pretend like they never happen, but you try to, you know, learn from those situations and move forward. And like I said earlier, even if it's in little bitty baby steps, as long as you're moving forward towards that so-called finish line area, everything's going to be good.
What are the sort of daily practices that you do now to sort of keep yourself on a path that, that you feel good and you feel healthy, you feel like you can, stay away from, those accidents, the pain that you have must still be in pain.
Yeah. You know, I've got artificial knees. I've got rods and screws in my back and my feet and things like that. And, you know, we have a plan now, though, compared to what it used to be. You know, now, and I've had recent surgeries. I had major spinal fusion surgery back in October. So for a short period of time, I had to be on those narcotics just to help you get through the initial surgery and whatnot.
Right.
But this time, you know, every time I'd have to have surgery since the whole addiction thing and I've had sobriety, you know, my wife Jill is always with me. We talk to the doctor. We tell him the whole story of my past. And then we make sure that if I need to be on any type of narcotic pain medication, it's always for a short period of time. And that if I would need a refill, only my wife, Jill, can call into the doctor for one. Only she can go to the pharmacy to pick it up. We talk to the pharmacist only, you know, so that, you know, there's no miscommunication there. And then when we get home, I have no idea where the pain pills are. And if I need something, she goes and gets me one. And that has worked really, really well. And over the years, people said to me, gosh, Dick, you have 20 plus years of sobriety from those painkillers. You mean to tell me you couldn't handle that yourself? And I'll be honest to gosh with you, I cannot 100% say that I could guarantee that I could handle the painkillers on my own. And that's scary.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 23 years of sobriety from them almost, and yet I don't know if I could trust myself with them. Yeah. And that's a scary thought.
And it's humbling.
Very humbling.
Where you stand in that space and you say, I can't, you mentioned your faith earlier, you stand in the space and you say, I cannot do this alone. And I have to surround myself with, not only my faith, but real people, pharmacists, my wife, doctors, everyone. I have to be open, honest, and get other people on the team because that's a huge lesson for people. We have a hard time doing that. Hard time inviting other people into our lives like that.
Yes. And you're right, Laurie. But when we do that, it takes such a burden off your own individual shoulders that it And people want to help others and let them help. And sometimes you just got to crack the door open a little bit. And then as you find out that, yes, this is helping, that door gets a little wider and wider.
Yeah. What are some of the other messages you bring to Brookings tonight in your talk? What are you sort of planning? Or do you plan what you're going to say? Or do you just kind of get up there and then find that the moment speaks to you?
No, I have kind of a general outline, and I have certain stories that I kind of like to tell and whatnot. But sometimes I'll get up there and I may change my mind on the way up onto the stage. You never know. So you'll have to come and find out, I guess. But, you know, I talk about hope and about that's a big part, that we lose hope and we lose everything. And so I talk a lot about hope and about, you know, commitment and dedication and, of course, faith. And it's not like you're going and listening to the Pope talk. Believe me, it's nothing like that. But you can tell that faith plays a big part in my daily life and whatnot. I try to wake up every morning, and this is something I'll leave tonight with the folks that are there as I finish off my talk, but is there's four things that I do every single morning when I wake up, and they've helped me through very difficult times over the years. And I share them with people because maybe if they wanted to try this, it might help them too. And it's pretty easy. I try to wake up every morning with a smile on my face, enthusiasm in my voice, joy in my heart, and faith in my soul. And those four things have really helped me a lot over the years.
Do you find that as times change and there's different things happening, whether there's a world event, you know, a tragedy somewhere, a hurricane, or, the impeachment proceedings that America has gone through, or an election season, do you find that that message of hope lands differently with people? Or do you think that people kind of come into this space and they shut all that out because they're here for a focused reason? Do you sort of see things bleeding in and out of your conversations with people that have to do with the broader world?
Yeah, it kind of does bleed in and out a little bit. And the world nowadays, it's so fast paced and it's just kind of a crazy world we live in right now. And with social media and everything like that, everything's instantaneous. Sometimes, and I even have to tell myself that because I'm very busy, you know, besides speaking, my wife Jill and I own a bed and breakfast in Bemidji, and I've been a fishing guide since I was 12. And
right.
So I'm on the move all the time. But sometimes I got to even tell myself, Dick, slow down, just relax, enjoy what you're doing. I mean, I do enjoy it, but just, you know, slow down a little bit, because sometimes we get in such a hurry that we don't get to see the things that we're meant to be seen. And that's a very important thing because, you know, we're on this earth a very short period of time when you really stop and think about it. And so you got to enjoy it to all the extent you can, as every day possible.
I love that. Well, you can see Dick Beardsley tonight. That's at 7 p.m. SDSU University Student Union. I hope you come back to South Dakota again and that we get to have you on the show in the future as well, Dick. Thanks so much.
You betcha, Lori. Thank you. Have a great day.